Test Talks, Episode 3.
Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com, and my mission is to help you succeed with test automation. Today, we're going to be speaking with John Sommez about test automation frameworks and personal branding. But before we start, I just wanted to give a personal shout out to all the people who were kind enough to rate Test Talks on iTunes. This one goes out to Matthew Pickle. You can check him out on Twitter. @MATICUS. If you like what you hear on Test Talks, head on over to testtalks.com and click on the subscribe and iTunes icon. Leave, hopefully, a 5-star review, and I will give you a personal shout out at the beginning of an upcoming episode. And now, let's talk with John Sommez. Check it out. I'm really excited today to be talking with John Sommez about test automation and personal branding for developers. John is the founder of Simple Programmer, an online developer trainer extraordinaire with over 50 courses on numerous topics, host of Get Up and Code podcast, life coach for software engineering, and much, much more. Hey, John, welcome to Test Talks.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So, John, before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So, I've been a developer for quite a while. I started out doing, I think, C and then C++, and then I've kind of come along, done a lot of C# and Java, and I've kind of gotten my hands into everything now. And really what I've focused on in the last few years is helping other developers in training. I found that I like coding, but even more than that, I actually like helping other people to learn technologies. So I've done a lot of courses for Pluralsight, and I found that one of the big things that I was able to do with teaching, with making things simple, making the complex simple, is kind of my logo or my theme. And I found that I could actually do kind of coaching and training on my own. So I'm kind of on my own now. I own a company called Simple Programmer, and that's what I do. Is I create training materials. I do coaching, sort of like a life coach for software developers or software engineers.
Awesome. I'll have to admit, I first heard about you from your Pluralsight courses, especially a creating automation test framework. And the Selenium automated web testing with Selenium. And I was really blown away by the content and the clarity of those two courses. I know you're a developer mainly, but how did you get into test automation? I just know sometimes with developers, they don't even want to touch test automation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, good question. When I first started out, I was trying to get my first development job with HP when I was working at HP. And I sort of had to come in through QA because there really wasn't a way for me to just get a development job. I didn't have a CS degree at the time, and this was my foot in the door. And so I came in doing QA, and I learned a lot about QA when I did that, and I was actually really interested in it. I found that this was something that a lot of developers, like you said, didn't really take the time to learn. And so I actually spent a couple of years doing QA as a QA, became a QA lead. And then that kind of stuck with me throughout my development career. So I was always kind of the go-between guy between the developers and the QA because I understood both sides and I could communicate. And then so once we started getting into creating web applications, or so much of the time, I ended up getting an interest in automation. And I found that it was a real good fit for me because I had this QA background. It was pretty fun for me to kind of be one of the first people exploring this idea of using these automated frameworks to be able to build something. So I found that kind of the good mix for me was that I understood enough on the QA side to understand how testing should be done and to be interested in it, but I understood enough on the development side to be able to build robust frameworks, not just recorded tests. Like at that time, a lot of the QA automation was really just recording things, doing playback recording, and so I was able to find a pretty good niche there.
Awesome. You brought up some good points. You knew QA, but you also were a programmer. And I guess a lot of questions I usually get asked on my blog is, do I need to know programming to do test automation? I say always that, yes, you need to have programming skill. That's why I think these courses on Selenium that you have are really excellent.
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah, I do agree with that. Definitely. It's you know, it doesn't require someone, I think, to have a really in-depth knowledge of programming, but you have to know enough, especially if you want to create a good framework and be able to maintain that framework. I always encourage organizations when I consult for them, I tell them, hey, you know, it's great that you have a QA team and they want to do automation, but you really need to pull in one or two developers, have them help you build the framework out and have them kind of be there building this, because it's just like any other software that you're building. It becomes a piece of software, a software asset for that team, and it has to be maintained. It has to have the same type of code quality and coding standards. And I think a lot of organizations don't understand that. They think, well, this is just a QA activity, so we're just going to build our automation framework. And if you have a lot of QA people that have never written any code and you kind of throw them in that environment, you should expect that you're not going to get a quality framework, you know, because they're essentially, you're asking them to build an application that tests another application.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely agree. So talking about the building frameworks, I just wanted to touch upon a few of the topics from one of those courses, see if you can expand on it. But in a nutshell, what is black box automated testing framework?
Okay, so I kind of came up with the term of black box automated testing or BAT testing because I thought it was kind of difficult to describe this because a lot of people call this customer acceptance testing or just automated testing. But basically what I'm talking about is where you are writing automated tests where you don't have the source code, or you're treating the code, the application, as a black box. This is, you know, different than unit testing, where you are actually seeing the source code, or we could call that white box testing, where you're actually seeing the code and actually writing against the actual production code. In this case, it's like a black box. Hey, we have a set of inputs. We can measure the outputs. So we're going to write automated tests that manipulate the inputs just like a user would, and then we're going to measure the outputs just like a user would.
Excellent. And this concept was really helpful to me because in my organization, we're doing behavior-driven development. And so a lot of developers are like, so what's the difference between BDD and TDD? And I basically took your concept of black box automated testing and said, if you can't see the code and you're treating the code like a black box, that's BDD. But if you're actually looking at the code, the source code, and you're adding hooks into your source code, that's unit testing. So that's something different. That's TDD. So that's how I kind of distinguish between BDD and TDD now. And that was really helpful for me to explain it to other people.
Right. Yeah, that is a tricky one. I like that as an explanation. Yeah. And I think one of the key things too, you know, with this is that it's when we talk about a framework, I think that's I kind of missed that part of your question, but the whole idea that this is a framework that we're building to enable us to do this. And I always say it's an application that tests another application, because you've got your application, that's your black box. But now we're going to write an actual application that's going to test the other application. And that's, it's not just we're writing scripts to test it, we're writing a framework. And that framework is what we're going to use in order to be able to test this other application. We're going to abstract away the things that are common. We're going to pull out the commonalities. We're going to actually build a real robust thing that tests our application, as opposed to, you know, just writing scripts or recording test scenarios. This is a much bigger project.
Awesome. Yeah, and that reminds me of another concept you brought up in the training is about when you talk about creating layers. So creating layers when designing your architecture for automated test. Can you explain that a little bit more?
So the layers is kind of the key thing that I think a lot of people miss when they start down this automated testing. And basically what I mean by these layers is that there's different levels in which you're interacting with the browser, in this case, if we're creating automated browser tests, which you have to be aware of. So that at the lowest level, you are basically manipulating the actual HTML. You're referencing the HTML that's actually on the web page. Now, at that layer is a layer that's needed. And automation, you have to have a driver that's going to do that. In many cases, Selenium is what the preferred driver is. But you don't want to write tests at that same layer, because if you write tests at that layer, then your tests are going to be brittle. They're going to be fragile. For example, if you have a test that is referencing, let's say, some ID in some HTML, Well, when that changes, if the UI changes, that test breaks. But worse than that, if there's 1,000 tests that reference that same ID, they all break at the same time. You got to update all those tests. So that's where this layer comes in, is I create this abstraction. I suggest that you have that lowest level layer, the driver layer, and then above that you have another layer, which is your framework layer. This is kind of the abstraction, the buffer zone between the actual browser, the actual HTML, and the intent of your application. So at this layer, at the framework, what we're trying to do is we're bridging that gap. The framework knows how to talk to the HTML. It knows how to use the Selenium or whatever driver you're using to actually manipulate that, the actual web page. But it also knows how to, it knows about your application. So it knows about the concepts of pages and users, the kind of higher level abstractions that you use in the application. So then with that second layer, you're able to create a third layer, which is your test. And those tests are able to work at that higher level. They don't need to worry about the ID of such and such button on such and such screen. Those tests now can operate at this higher abstraction, and they could say, you know, add a user with this first name and this last name, and they don't have to worry about clicking buttons and all that thing. Your framework is handling that translation. So that's kind of the idea of using these layers.
And what I love about this concept of layers also is it's another thing you touch upon in the training about how tests are not code. So when you build out these layers the right way, it's almost like you take away some of the pain points or some of the ugliness you see sometimes with test automation. Is when you go into it, it just looks like a big block of messy code, where if you block it into layers, it almost facilitates cleaner code that's more readable, more user-friendly.
Sure, exactly. So I kind of have the philosophy that I want the test to read like English. I want the test to be as clear, as high level abstractions as possible, so that they're, first of all, easy to understand. Because when a test fails, there's this very small window that you have to be able to identify why did the test fail, or what was that test doing. And if you can't identify it in that small window, you throw out the test, or the test becomes really quite worthless at that point. If it takes you just as long to debug it as it would to actually debug it without the test, then the test starts to lose value. So I try to make it as close to human language as possible, and that requires us to make that abstraction level very high. At the same time, I want to reduce the complexity, because remember, you might have developers that are creating the automation framework, but in many cases, it's QA people that may not have a lot of development experience. Maybe they know a little bit of scripting or know enough programming to get around, but the framework is probably fairly complex. So I want these tests to be as simple as possible, so that someone with a very minimal development experience can write those tests, understand those tests. And so that's, I kind of take out all of the stuff, like we don't want to declare variables. We want to use a lot of static methods and make everything kind of flow as almost a natural language for the testing. And I find that makes it so that the tests are going to be a lot more likely to be maintained, but they're easier to understand, and they're less fragile, because you're testing at a very high level of abstraction.
What's funny is there's like a mantra almost in automation, saying automation is code. It is development code. It should be treated just like development code, you know, the same processes. And that's all true. But then this was kind of like an epiphany. Yes, it's real code, but you don't have to write it like it is production code. And by doing that, you make it easier. That we should focus on making the writing of the scripts easier over, you know, true best practices for if this was real production code.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's really the key to it, because, you know, I came at this from working on a lot of different automation frameworks or a lot of automation projects, and kind of cleaning up automation projects that had failed, where I've seen a lot of companies where they've come in with an automation effort and 6 months later it's dead, because and the biggest reason is because they can't maintain these tests. And so that's where my philosophy of let's make the tests as simple and easy as possible came from, is because that's the number one thing that's going to kill your automation efforts. The number one reason why, you know, project management is going to shut the books and say, no, we automated testing didn't work for us, is because those tests broke and they weren't maintainable and they weren't understandable. So that's why I try to make the tests as easy as possible. We're going to devote a lot of energy and effort into building an automation framework. That's where we're going to put all the complexity. But those tests, we're going to always sacrifice. We're always going to say, hey, we're going to make the framework itself more complex. That'll be more difficult code to maintain it right in exchange for making the tests easy.
Excellent. Is there one thing you see over and over again in your consultant gigs that you see people doing wrong with test automation?
I'd say there's actually two things. So the biggest thing, and it's kind of morphing, right? So the biggest thing that there used to be and there still is today is recording scripts. We've all seen the kind of automation tools where you can record and then it plays back, right? That's becoming less now, but that was really prevalent for a long time is that's automation. We just record it and then we play it back. And that was a big, big no-no. That was, you're almost completely doomed to failure if you do it that way, because things are going to change. The UI is going to change. It's going to break all your tests. You're going to be in big trouble there. So that was really what the number one thing was. But I'd say now it's transitioning from that to complexity in the tests, where now I think more people understand that this is a programming effort, that you do have to write code, that you have to write some kind of a framework, or that these tests are code. Let's say that a lot of people still don't understand that they need a framework, that abstraction layer, like I was saying. And so what they're doing is they're writing really complicated tests that are directly manipulating the browser and directly tied to the HTML. So even though they're being a little bit more clever than recording things, they're still making their tests really brittle and still tying them directly to the HTML. And it's almost the same mistake, but it's kind of morphed on how you see it. Before it was these recording tools. Now it's manually coding, but with the same problem.
John, I definitely agree with those two points, especially with people still using record and playback tools. I'm always amazed when I hear about people using Selenium IDE for all the development. So are there any red flags you look for when you're reviewing someone's automation framework to see if they're developing their tests at the right level?
Yeah, I'd say the first thing I look for when I look at tests is I say, okay, first of all, can I read and understand your test? If you have to explain to me what the test is, if I can just read it and understand what is the testing, then there's a problem. And then the second thing I look for is I say, okay, well, maybe you could do that and still use Selenium directly in the test. That's possible to do. But then that's the second thing I look for is I say, okay, did you actually use the driver, the browser driver, like Selenium is a browser driver in the test? And that's, you know, I'm looking for that, because that's the indicator that you're going to have trouble down the road. Because unless you did it in a really smart way that abstracts away those pieces, in which case, if you did do that, then probably you need a framework anyway, then you probably don't have a framework if you didn't do that. So I'm looking to see, you know, did you make your tests easy to understand? And then second, did you tie yourself to a particular implementation of the interface that's going to cause you problems later down the road?
Awesome. And just so you know, I'm definitely going to have a link to the creating an automated testing framework with Selenium on the blog post, because I think everyone, if they can, they should definitely view it, because all these things John's talking about, he goes into detail and he actually walks you step by step how to create a framework from scratch. He does use C#, but it's the same principles you would apply to Java. I work in Java. I was able to take those same principles and use them in my framework, so I highly recommend that particular video course. So also, John, is there any resource or book you would recommend to help someone to learn programming or test automation?
That's a good question. I think probably at this point, I mean, you know, the best value, you know, and I don't say this just because I'm a Pluralsight author, but because I guess I've got some beginning Java courses on there, but basically I think, you know, what's it like? It's like $30 a month for the basic membership of Pluralsight. It's insane, because it's like 1,200 courses or something, like 50 courses, new courses a month. It's just an insane value. When I was trying to learn programming, I was buying these expensive books for like $50 or $60 a shot, and I was buying like two a month or so, you know, and those were long books, and they weren't to the point, and they weren't as effective as just watching training videos. So I think Pluralsight is really, really a good deal. That's where I would go today. You know, I am an author, so you know, of course I have a bias, but That's part of the reason why I am an author, though, is because when they approached me and said, "Hey, do you want to do these courses?" I was like, "What? Are you kidding me? This is crazy. This is such a good deal. I wish this was around, you know, when I was trying to learn, because it's so much, the barrier to entry is so much lower now." I think there's also other resources besides Pluralsight that there's like the CodeAcademy.com. There's a bunch of those that come up. Some free resources that will teach you kind of the basics of programming as well. I know Khan Academy has one now, but I'm not so sure that one is quite the same type of programming that you would use in automation. But there's definitely a lot of free resources out there. The biggest thing that I would say, though, to encourage someone trying to learn how to program, don't just open a book and think that you're just going to read the book and then you're going to learn how to program. You have to be willing to fail and be willing to go ahead and try it. Like, as soon as you can start doing exercises, as soon as you can start getting into the code and trying to write an application or write code, that's what you got to do if you want to learn as fast as possible. A lot of people make the mistakes of just reading books cover to cover, and they're not getting that trial and error type of learning experience that's so valuable.
I definitely agree with the hands-on approach. That's what JoeCalantonio.com is all about. We really usually don't focus on the theory so much. We really focus on rolling up our sleeves and step-by-step going through examples, actually using the application and trying to see how it works with different technologies. So I definitely agree with that. And also, I'm not a Pluralsight author, but I love Pluralsight. So if you don't know about it, you should check it out. Now, John, I'd like to switch gears right now and actually focus on personal branding for developers.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So this is kind of my big focus right now. I think this is kind of I'm actually working on a course on this, which I can talk about a little bit later. But the key concept here is that you can only go so far with your skills. And I always use this example. I say, when I give a talk on this and I show a picture of Bill Clinton and I say, okay, how much do you think this guy gets paid to talk? And some people guess right. It's around $200,000. He makes several million dollars a year talking. So one appearance might be $200,000 to $250,000. And I say, okay, now how much of his money that he makes for talking is because he's such a phenomenal skilled speaker, and how much of it is because of his name? And at that point, most people kind of guess right. It's a lot of it is probably due to his name. Now, I don't say that he's not a good speaker. He's of course an excellent speaker. He's got a lot of practice. He's was the president of the United States of America, but you have to admit that a large portion of where he is able to generate his money or his price tag comes from his name. So my whole point in saying that is a lot of software developers don't realize this truth, which is that if you can build a name for yourself, if, for example, you go to a job interview, right? And this is a high-paying job, and you shake the hand of the interviewer, and the interviewer says, "Oh, hey, I know you. I read your blog. Okay, right then, do you think that you're going to get that job? I mean, unless you totally biff the job, you're almost a shoo-in at that point, right? And it carries beyond that. If you have a book and someone says, "Oh yeah, I read your book," you're going to have so many more opportunities, so many more doors open to you. You're going to be able to demand a higher hourly rate if you're a freelancer, and you're going to have clients come to you. So I think the key thing is, most software developers, even if you're just working for an employer, is that if you build up a name, if you build up a brand, if you build up a reputation in an industry, you're going to be able to ask for a bigger raise. You're going to be able to have a lot more opportunities available to you. It just opens up a whole world of possibilities that you can polish your skill to some degree, but you have to realize that your fame to some degree, your name is a multiplier of your skill, and that's an important part of the equation that you really can't ignore.
It really is a great thing to have. Just even when someone Googles your name, you should be in control of what comes up. So if you're not the very first hit, I think that's really important. That's something HR probably does all the time now. The first thing they do is just Google your name.
Right.
Sounds awesome. So, John, can you tell us the full name of the course that you're developing and also the type of topics that you're going to be covering in it?
So it's called How to Market Yourself as a Software Developer. And the easiest way to get to it is just to go to devcareerboost.com. That's D-E-V careerboost.com, or you can find out on my website at simpleprogrammer.com/how-to-market-yourself. But basically, the course is going to cover basically what branding is. So how to create your own personal brand, and kind of, I really focus on this idea of having a niche. Like, you know, I really like your niche here, this on the automated testing. It's so important that you have a niche, because then you're able to dominate a whole market. You're able to be known as you know, I always use the example, you know, a real good example is, let's say that your garbage disposal breaks, right? And you go to look up a plumber, and you see ABC Plumbing, and you see, you know, Joe's Plumbing, and then you see Garbage Disposal Fix-It Man Plumbing. Who are you going to call? You're going to call the Garbage Disposal Fix-It Man. And that's the power of having a niche, of having a very specific targeted brand, is that people are going to assume you're going to look more like an expert. You're going to have more of a domination of that market. So I cover that, the marketing aspect or building your brand. I cover the basics of just marketing of I have a tutorial in there, step-by-step guide on how to set up a blog, and not just a free blog, but, you know, setting up a blog on something like Bluehost, and also setting up your own Linux server using a VPS, kind of the cheapest route to go and the most powerful route. And I show exactly step by step how to do this, how to set up a WordPress install. And then I've got actually four books in there. One kind of basic how to market yourself and marketing, why you should market yourself book. I've got one about resumes, resume do's and don'ts, some resume advice there. I've got a networking tips for software developers. And then I've got a guide to getting your name out there. Things like, how do you get on podcasts? How do you start a podcast? How do you use YouTube or video or all these different kinds of mediums, write articles or write books? And then the last piece here is how to use social networks effectively. So I go kind of over the social networks and give you some advice on how to stay active on them and what's important, kind of the basics that a developer would want to know. So the whole course basically is designed to teach you how to get out there, build a brand, market yourself, and get your name out there so that you can start building up a reputation and building your own personal brand as a software developer. And by doing so, you're going to be able to make more money. You're going to be able to get a better job. You're going to have opportunities that are going to come to you.
Sounds awesome. I recommend everyone check that out. So, John, also, do you cover anything about productivity? Because I'm amazed by how many videos you pump. You actually do in a year. It takes me like at least 2 days to edit a 5-minute video, and by then, you know, I end up doing one video a month. And a podcast that's been taking me the weekend. So what's the secret to being so productive? Do you cover that in this course? Is there another course you have for that, or anything you have to recommend how to be so productive?
So this course actually is really focused on the marketing side of it. I just recently did do a blog post on my productivity secret. I'm actually in contract with Manning Publications. I just signed the contract to write a book about software developer life. The title is still in the works, but it's going to cover like fitness and productivity and the whole gamut of the life coaching type of things that I do. That's going to have a big section on productivity, but kind of the biggest thing that I do that helps my productivity is that I track my time. I set quotas for myself. Instead of driving things where I see how much I can get done in a certain amount of time, I have a quota. And that quota ensures that I'm going to get certain number of things done in a certain amount of time. So when I was doing Pluralsight courses, my quota was to get 3 modules done every week. And that was going to happen no matter what. And so it kind of forced me to rearrange other things based on that quota. And I have, you know, different quotas around. I'm producing a blog post every week, a YouTube video, a Get Up and Code podcast. I do this full time, so obviously that I can fit that in there. But that quota system, I sort of combined with what's called the Pomodoro technique, which is basically I track my time in these 25-minute bursts of concentrated time so that I'm not wasting time. And it's a no-interruption type of time. And then I use this to sort of measure out I plan for the day. I know exactly what I'm going to do that day. I know exactly what I'm going to do that week. So I don't waste a lot of time thinking about what I need to do or goofing off. off, and I try to stay super focused during that time. I shut out a lot of distractions. I try to make sure that I balance quality with productivity. So I tend to be a perfectionist. So the quota system helps me to not be so much of a perfectionist, because I try to say, okay, I'd rather ship 100 things that are at the 80% good enough mark than 5 things that are at the 95%. And you know, that number kind of changes depending on where it is. And I find that by focusing like that, if I get 100 things out at that 80% mark, well, magically, you know, the last 50 of them were at the 90% mark without even trying, because you get into the rhythm, you get better at it as you go. So I kind of have this philosophy that it's better, like, don't worry about polishing yourself. Don't worry about, you know, being the best. Just produce a lot of stuff and you're going to get better, it's going to come easier, and the quality will go up automatically, as opposed to being very meticulous about the quality being so high at the beginning, and then you don't get enough practice to be able to get enough times in to be able to develop that. So that's kind of my productivity in a nutshell there.
Great, awesome, great advice. And before this interview, I stumbled across that blog post on productivity. And I downloaded a timer app for my iPad, and I did 2 25-minute sessions, and it really was helpful. It really helped me stay focused on one task, not check my email or anything. I'm going to try to implement it this month and just see really how much it helps.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. Let me know how that goes, because I'm very curious to see how. A lot of people have been telling me that they're going to start implementing that system, and I've just found I found it to be so effective. It's hard to do sometimes. But when I started doing that, really, really concentrating on doing that, I found that there was a lot of time that I was wasting before because I wasn't focused. And the other thing that I found is that there's a huge amount of mental fatigue in doing this focused 25-minute. We tend to basically kind of blow up our day where, you know, in an 8-hour day, maybe we're only working hard like 2 or 3 hours. If even sometimes. And then when you start doing this and you try to do Pomodoros for, you know, 6 or 7 hours in the day, you're exhausted by the time, because you realize that how much distractions and interruptions are taking away a huge percentage of your day. So it'd be really interesting to hear what your experience is.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely going to try it out, and I'll definitely get back to you on it. So, John, as I also mentioned at the beginning of the show, you also have a podcast called Get Up and Code. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. So this it's more on the fitness side, really. It's called Get Up and Code. It's basically a podcast for developers about fitness and health and nutrition. I had a co-host for it, Iris Clisson, but she recently left. She's been pretty busy with a lot of other things, so it's kind of just me now. But I talk a lot about I interview a lot of people, developers that have kind of fitness story, like weight loss stories or transformation stories, and kind of some of the CEOs of tech companies that are building like wearable computing devices and that kind of technology. Like we had one of the engineers from Fitbit on there, and we kind of talk about the technology and what they use and stuff. So we kind of try to combine, you know, all the things that are kind of this overlap of this community. I found that there's a lot of developers that are interested in fitness, and so there's this kind of overlap, and so this podcast is really designed to serve everyone in that community that's either you're trying to get in shape, you want to learn how basic nutrition and dieting and how to lose weight or gain muscle, or you're already kind of an athlete and you want to kind of connect with other people that have the same kind of interests as you do.
So, John, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their automation frameworks? And let us know the best way to find out or contact you.
Sure. Okay. So I would say the biggest thing for improving your automation framework is to make sure that you have a level of abstraction between your actual browser and your tests. If you can make it so that your tests read like the business requirements of your application, if your test should, when you, your automation test should be like, add user to, you know, to system and then add item to cart, or they should read like that. They shouldn't read like look for button with ID of login button, look for label with ID of first name, fill in John. If your tests read the second way, then you want to try and make your tests move to the first way. Try to make the tests easier. And that, if you start with that goal in mind, if you just start with the goal in mind of saying, I want the tests to communicate the business, the actual problem domain of the system, and then you figure out how that you're going to make that happen, and that's going to be where you develop your automation framework, then you're going to, you don't have to know exactly how did I do it or how did, you know, someone else do it. You're going to be able to work backwards from there. So the biggest thing is just focus with the end in mind that you're going to simplify your tests. You're going to make them as clear and simple, straightforward as possible. And then everything else will flow from there. And then if you want to get in contact with me, the best way is through simpleprogrammer.com. There's a big contact me there. You can also check out on Pluralsight. You can search for my videos there. And actually to put it, like you said, Joe, if you search for John Sonmez on Google, you should see all of the things that I'm involved in. I'll leave this tip as well, which is Google your own name if you're interested in branding and marketing, and see what comes up there, because that is who you are to the world. Because that's what everyone's going to do when they interview you, or they're thinking about hiring you for as a client or as a client of yours is thinking about hiring you. So just Google my name and you'll find me.
Awesome. Thank you, John, once again for joining us on Test Talks. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It was fun. Glad to do it anytime.
Thank you for joining me on Test Talks. And remember, you can find the links to everything of value that we talked about today in the show notes at www.testtalks.com/03. And as always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.